Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the new trending gift this holiday season, coloring books for adults. The latest check of Amazon's top-selling books lists no fewer than 6 books in the top 50, coloring everything from geometric shapes to butterflies and animals and landscapes. This trend started in Europe last year and has spread to America for its alleged stress and anxiety-reducing qualities. In fact, several scientific studies seem to suggest that coloring in mandalas, an intricate circular medallion shape from Eastern cultures, seem to do have stress-reducing qualities. Well, my guest today is Canadian illustrator and artist Steve McDonald. He's been drawing real and fanciful cityscapes for years. But with the popularity of adult coloring books, he's adapted his work to create Fantastic Cities, a coloring book of amazing places, real and imagined. The book takes bird's-eye views of icons like Piccadilly Circus in London, Soho in New York City, Mont Saint-Michel in France, or Habitat 67 in Montreal, along with more generic cityscapes and residential areas from around the world, a Rio de Janeiro favela, or a harbor scene from coastal Greenland. All are intricately delineated drawings requiring prolonged, concentrated effort. McDonald joins me today to talk about the trend and his artwork today on Studio Tulsa. Steve McDonald, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, we'll talk about this phenomenon of coloring books for adults in a moment, but first I want to talk about your artwork, because at first glance you could see where somebody would say this would make excellent coloring work because of your own illustration talents and artistic talents. You seem to be intrigued by cityscapes, both real and imagined, as well as that delineation that cityscapes give you from building to building, from the contrast between the vertical horizon and horizontal. And that really comes out in your artwork.
Well, that's a great statement. I love buildings. I love architecture, cityscapes, townscapes, any kind of collection of buildings. I think it makes for, I love line work. Every artist has their thing. Some artists like pushing paint around. Some artists like playing with light. I've just always loved playing with lines. So this is what I've been doing for a while. Putting them in the vehicle of a coloring book is sort of a recent development. But the work that I've been doing has worked perfectly for this.
And has it just come from probably your youth when you were drawing? I mean, it really comes from that sort of pen and ink drawing sort of thing.
The style of the work or the idea?
Well, the idea, yeah, of how you've sort of developed your own style. I mean, it really comes...
I've been an illustrator for years and sort of selling work off gallery walls as well, sort of dipping in and out of the fine art and the illustration world. There's a gray area there, as most people know.
Uh-huh.
And I've just developed this style. You know, as a kid, I actually thought for a while maybe I should be an architect, but I never went there, and drawing buildings, and I've always been fascinated by it. It's kind of funny. I don't like living in cities. I live in the country always, so it's sort of ironic. I sit here in my studio on a nice, beautiful river drawing these really complex cities. But I love it.
Do you draw them off of real life, or are you using...
You know what? Most of the cities in this book are painstakingly accurate. I draw from photos. I mean, they're really detailed aerial imagery, so I do work from photos. I work from my own photos sometimes. Sometimes I work from pretty noted photographers' photos, always in collaboration or with permission. So I'm kind of proud of how accurate those drawings are, as well as they've been given my own flair, obviously, my own style, and I've taken certain things and changed them and distorted them. But they are, you should be able to find your own building if you're looking at a view that you're aware of.
Well, and what I love about your work is you're not drawing expansive cityscapes. You're showing the congestion of the city, too, because it's a sort of the crampedness. So
it is where the story is, really, isn't it? I love the aerial view, first of all, because it gives you this different vantage that we don't normally get. And I like the congested, uncelebrated areas sometimes. I mean, there's a few iconic buildings and cities in that book, but most of these are views that you wouldn't normally get on a travel brochure, or there's something sort of unique about that place, and it might be a packed favela as opposed to the beautiful tourist street.
Right, or a neighborhood where you're looking at row upon row upon row upon row of row houses.
Right, and it tells you a story. I think it tells you some sort of story, and then especially if you put them all together and you have these little blips from all over the planet, and they're quite different, but there's the same thing happening, and it sort of shows you what, hopefully the book serves as a travel log and a you know, if you can't get out of your own house or your own head, it allows you this creative place to go, but it also maybe you travel a bit when you flip through my book.
But I think you've touched on something that really does show up, is that when you're a true urban dweller, that experience, you would say there's nothing in common from a city in Germany and a city in Japan, but when you actually look at it from a bird's eye view and you're looking at the housing, it's remarkably similar. I mean, maybe the architectural accents.
A bunch of little hives all over the planet. I almost did a book a few years ago and I was going to call it Human Hives, and it was essentially the same idea, just a huge collection of drawings of cities from above and communities and buildings and patterns and habitats. I never did that book. I did this book, thankfully, because I think there's a much better idea and a much better collection of work, but it's the same sort of thing. It's just, hey, you know, have some fun, color this book, be creative, but also maybe you go away subconsciously with a little bit of architectural language and a little bit of a, you feel like you've traveled around the planet.
Yeah, the main differences are the architectural details or the architectural decoration of these neighborhoods. I mean, Bremen, Germany, looks remarkably similar to
Some cities go up, some cities go outwards, some mm-hmm. cities, you know, like you say, you get the row houses here, but you get the stacked different things everywhere, but they all sort of have a similar feel. They're quite organic, I think, sometimes when you look at them from the air. Less geometric and less structured than sometimes we imagine. When you look at some of these cities from the air, you're like, wow, it looks like an insect hive. It doesn't look like a planned out city. So. But there's also cities that are perfect grids. They're fun to draw as well.
Yeah. Now, in this book, you're showing us a wide variety of cityscapes. What I love is when I actually look at your artwork, you can actually see the connection between this coloring book for adults, Fantastic Cities, and your artwork, because there's enough similarities in the work to give us a sense. But also, you're doing some really imaginative things. I love these imaginary flying vehicles that you do.
That's a project that's very close to my heart, is these fictional, fantastic flying cars and floating buses and ships. It's a series I've been working on in my spare time over the last couple of years, and it is actually part of a bigger project. It's the book I'm putting together with my younger brother, who's an author based out of New York. And so we're doing a kid's book. I'm not going to say a lot about it right now, but we're having a lot of fun. And I think it's going to be a really great book. But suffice to say, it involves all these flying buses and cars and trucks and things. So there's a purpose for those illustrations beyond just having them there on my website. They're part of a bigger project.
Yeah, and without giving too much away about that, what I was just going to describe, one of the really iconic images that most people sort of be able to get through their mind's eye, and that is, think of a floating double-decker London red bus with wings flying over the S shapes of the Thames with all the cityscape beneath it. It is really a charming, wonderful, charming image.
Unlike the coloring book stuff, they're full of color, and I got to finish them off. It's been fun with the coloring book watching everyone else finish my drawings. There's some really neat stuff happening out there. Well, but I do like working with color as well, as you said. I do all kinds of different stuff.
So when somebody approached you about turning your artwork into a coloring book, what was your reaction? I can imagine where you might not be all that excited about it.
You know what? I get asked the question a lot, and it wasn't a. I put this thing together and went to a bunch of publishers, so it wasn't someone approaching me with a tangible idea. The first people that approached me were really a few friends and a few clients and my own daughters. You know, I was working on these countless drawings, these really detailed line drawings, and really loving them. But like I said, I didn't really have I hadn't planned what I was doing with them, and I got this suggestion a few times. And as an artist, the first time, you sort of laugh, you chuckle, you think, you know, you don't get insulted, but you think I'm an artist. These are going to end up on a gallery wall, or these are going to be in my own. But the more I gave it some thought, and the more I really sort of, the idea that this vehicle could get my drawings out so far and wide, more than anything else I could imagine, and to put them all together like this, it made a lot of sense. The reward of seeing people work on them and color them and get their own sense of creative space and peace out of them, that's been a pleasure to watch.
This is what the phenomenon is of this whole idea of adult coloring books. It's the idea that this is a stress reliever. You look at a big image, you're coloring in, whether it's colored pencils. I imagine some people are using watercolors.
I think there's all kinds of mediums that people use. And yes, the whole industry has sort of centered itself around this idea of meditative, therapeutic, stress-reducing benefits of these coloring books. I think that's true. It's not how we're marketing my book. I think it's a coloring book. It's an expert coloring book that's meant to open up a creative side of yourself and give you that space. I think anything you do like that, whether it's music or writing poetry or pottery or coloring a book or doing your own drawings, I think it's always going to lead to less stress and therapeutic value. I don't think it's unique to coloring books, but I think it's an accessible one, and it's a trendy one, and I think it's fun, and I think it's affordable, and I think it's great watching the popularity of these things skyrocket.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, as you're creating these delineated images of, you know, line drawings, do you get that same sense of meditative quality?
I think anyone who does something that they absolutely love doing, and I think that can be drawing pictures like I do, to practicing medicine, to putting horseshoes on horses, if it's what you actually love doing, I think it's always going to have a meditative, stress-reducing quality, and I love what I do. So yes, I go away to a place when I draw that you sort of time stops, but not always. It's also work, so... No, I'm very fortunate to do something that I love doing and I find very meditative on a daily basis.
And in the case of your drawings, they are so meticulously rendered. It is exacting work, I would think, in many ways. I would say maybe you don't get that same quality because they are so meticulously rendered.
I love it, though. I mean, it's what I love doing. I think it's no less exacting or meticulous than someone who manipulates oil paint in a really finely detailed way, or no, it's what I do, and it's what I love to do. I don't find it tedious. I think some people look at some of my drawings and think that would not be fun to do, but I love it. Maybe that's it's the absurdity of some of them that I do. There's a picture of San Francisco in there that's just rows and rows and rows of houses, almost straight on, but there's too many. It's almost an absurd picture to color. That's kind of the idea with a few of them, is to push the limits of it. But that you'd be surprised, there's people out there that dive right in.
Oh, I know.
Color them in and do every little bit, every little window, and it's very impressive. So there's something for everyone in that book, I think.
And you're talking about cityscapes that would probably have thousands of panes of windows, maybe even tens of thousands.
There's a few, and you know, you're gonna get. The book has gotten a lot of compliments and a lot of great press. But there's the odd thing that one complaint I've had is like, how many windows did you think would be fun to color? and you got to chuckle because it's but there's people out there that they look at those drawings and they're like, look at all the windows. This is going to be fantastic to color. So.
Well, the irony of it is I've seen your own colored version of some of these images that you do in your artwork. You're more of a, it's more like color field in a way. You know, it's like, you know, every roof is green and all the windows in the top thing will be green. And
yeah, when I color these in my own, a lot of the time, I work in a very sort of design-orientated way, and I work through it's great to see all the different, you know, that's maybe one of many, many approaches. It's some of the stuff being created by the people who bought the book, better than I could do, quite frankly. Really wonderful stuff. Some graphic markers you can get, or watercolors. Pencil crayons, I think, are really the best because they can be sharpened up right to a nice fine point, but they also have a nice color. You know, it's just been great to watch people finish my work. It's hilarious. And make it their own work.
My guest today is artist and illustrator Steve McDonald. He is the creator of Fantastic Cities, a coloring book of amazing places, real and imagined. And it's part of this big trend during this holiday season, coloring books for adults. Everybody's talking about it this holiday season. And it might be the perfect gift on your list. But these are wonderful images, bird's eye views of villages, cities, and just really amazing cityscapes from Singapore and Tokyo to Paris to London, the Piccadilly Circus, the Grand Mosque in Istanbul, but that's really sort of the outliers. There are some really popular worldwide known places like Mont Saint-Michel in France. There is a very famous castle in Japan that I'm losing the name of, but it's a very recognizable structure.
Hopefully you feel like you've been around the world on an around the world ticket.
Yeah. So what went into choosing the various subjects you're going to put in the book? Because some of them are really off the beaten path. There's a harbor scene in Greenland.
That's one of my personal travels. So there's a few in there that have to do with my, you know, I'm a lifelong traveler, and as much as possible, I try to draw places I've actually been to. It's not 100% true. And the book could have been 10 times as thick. This world is full of wonderful cities and harbors, downtown cores and neighborhoods. You know, you could go on and on and on.
What's really amazing, though, is when you're looking at these bird's eye views, all of a sudden a little village along the Cinque Terre in Italy has something in common with, say, a group of row houses in sort of northern Europe, if you will. It's like it's a very different, but when you see this sort of horizontality, I guess, of these cityscapes, and especially when you see them in black and white, delineated line, all of a sudden you say, wow, these look really amazingly similar in their own way.
I think so. And I think when you get above something, anything, and pull back a little bit from it, then you start to see the similarities in pattern and the similarities as opposed to the differences.
Now, you did mention a favela earlier in Brazil, and why include that particular image?
Well, first of all, it's a fantastic sort of jumble of buildings and pattern that gets created with the rooftops, and there's a curving street through the middle of that composition, I think. And it's just one of those iconic places on the planet. We all know about them. We all hear about them. Their growth and their creation is unique. The story of their existence is unique. So I thought it was worthy of being included. But like I said, you could have had a book with 100, 200, 1,000 pages with what's available. And we do have another book full of architecture coming. So you could go on and on with this story of architecture and habitation on the planet.
One of the most imagined landscape is this immense traffic jam.
You know what? It almost doesn't fit in the book, but I love that image so much, and it was part of my original idea. And it's sort of the idea is it wouldn't be there without a city. We wanted it to feel like a city. There's a few people that have dove right into that one. It's almost like a book of cars would sell well because there's a whole crowd of people that, I love the one with the cars.
Yeah. And then there's something else you do, which is you take these scenes and the architectural images, and sometimes it's maybe even imagined images. I'm thinking of the Mont Saint-Michel mandala, where I almost feel like the center of it has something to do with the actual cathedral at the top of the village.
Those are actual sort of manipulations of the realistic views that I do. And I think a lot of, but when I'm doing them, I try to think about what's sort of special about that view or that place. I try to concentrate, but they're mainly sort of geometric experimentations. People love coloring those. The whole Mandela thing is very popular in the coloring, and there's a reason for it. There's psychological sort of benefits of working on a Mandela and what it does to your brain and your concentration and your focus. But I do love the realistic views, but we thought those were worthy of being included.
Yeah, for those that don't know what a mandala is, and I didn't know what it was before, it's almost like a kaleidoscope image.
Kaleidoscope works as well, I think.
Yeah, and it's basically taking an image of a cityscape and reducing all the architectural elements into that sort of kaleidoscopic sort of view where you have, you know, columns colliding with one another. And they're really, really, I could see where they would be a lot of fun to do.
They are, well, and the end result of them they're quite fun too. People tend to get a little more experimental with their colors and stuff, and they don't think they have to stick to what something should be because it's been patterned out for them. And there's some really cool. They end up looking like strange technological target engine parts or something when people color them in. They're really fun to watch the results come out of people.
My guest today is Steve McDonald, an artist illustrator and the author of Fantastic Cities, a coloring book of amazing places, real and imagined. And this book and others like it are sort of taking people by storm as the sort of the perfect stress-relieving gift, just sitting down with colors and doing this some of these amazing line drawings. And on the very next to last page of this book, you alluded to this earlier, it's a overhead view of San Francisco. And I just can't imagine even making something like this. I mean, we're talking maybe a couple thousand houses.
it's a bit insane, that drawing, but I thought that, but for that reason alone, it was worthy of being included. I love creating the thing, and people have been less inhibited by it than I thought. There's a tag on Instagram, just fantastic cities on Instagram. If you go there, you'll see what people have been doing with the book, and that one's been colored in quite a few times.
That's amazing. And what's been your reaction to how people have, I mean, in this day and age with, and I'm assuming that in your original scale, it's perhaps larger than the actual book?
Yes, I draw quite a bit, whether I'm working digitally or on paper, all the drawings are done quite a bit larger than they appear in the book in the end, for a couple reasons. It's much easier, obviously, to get into the detail and all the little nitty-gritty when you're working on a larger scale. It'd be actually harder to do them if they were that small. When you reduce them and put them in a published format, they really clean up nicely. So I work way larger.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you been surprised? You've sort of alluded to the people that you've seen their work.
People send all kinds of stuff to me directly, which is really a pleasure to receive, and I encourage people to continue doing that because I sort through some of them and try to post it on social media. And then the real treasure trove of them is, on Instagram, there's a tag, just say Fantastic Cities, one word, and there's over 1,000 examples of users that have submitted their colored versions from the book, and some of them are really impressive. And it's fun for me to scroll through, as you can imagine, because some of them are funny, some of them are impressive, some of them are quite unique. So there's some real artists out there. What they're doing with coloring books is why they're not doing their own work. Maybe they are, but it's really nice, really nice.
Well, now have you heard back from people who've used the book and have talked about this sort of stress relief?
Yes, that's another whole side of things that's, you know, when you really think about it, the most rewarding. I've heard from a number of cancer patients. I've heard from a few people that are recovering from something or other. I've heard from some people that have chronic, you know, I have a handful of, it's not a huge list of letters, but I have a handful of emails from these type of people that have just said, you know, thanks. Thanks for giving me something like this in my life. Thanks for you and all the other artists that are doing these kind of coloring books and these kind of, like, I can do this in my living room with not a lot of effort. It's really helping me out, and it's helping my state of mind. So that's an unexpected and really, really quite wonderful, and maybe not that, or not deserved, but it's a really nice side of it, beyond the artistic coloring thing.
Well, the name of the book is Fantastic Cities, and as I understand it, there's a couple of others coming up in the next year or so, Fantastic Structures and Fantastic Collections. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a few things coming out. It's Chronicle Books in San Francisco, who's my partner in this whole venture. They've had some great ideas along the way, and we have a book coming out this spring, the follow-up to Cities, and it's called Structures, and it's very similar. It's maybe a little more zeroed in on individual buildings instead of cityscapes, so it's still an architectural exploration of the planet, but you're going to see more detail and more buildings themselves instead of these broad cityscapes. And then Collections is coming out in the fall, and it's sort of what it sounds like, a whole bunch of everything.
Well, one of the most interesting sides of your artwork is your fascination with mechanical contraptions. And, you know, fanciful mechanical contraptions as well as, you know, everyday complex mechanical structures. And you'll draw those, too.
Love that stuff. And in a way, it's kind of like the detailed city drawings. I have a whole body of work where really detailed drawings of engines and turbines and that kind of thing. I think they'll make their way into a coloring book one day as well. But they are sort of a different stream. But same approach, these sort of really detailed line work. And, you know, my thing is kind of detail and chaos. And chaos, not, that's the wrong word, complexity. I love getting into things. There's a whole audience for it out there, I'm finding.
Yeah. Well, the name of the book is Fantastic Cities. Steve McDonald, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Canadian illustrator and artist Steve McDonald talking about the new holiday trend this year, coloring books for adults, and his own work, Fantastic Cities, a coloring book of amazing places, real and imagined. It's published by Chronicle Books. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Dr. John Schumann.
If you haven't heard of Theranos, a startup company promising to disrupt the clinical laboratory industry, you might have seen news about it recently. The company has hit a wave of negative press inspired by a Wall Street Journal expose on its early failures. Theranos has a compelling backstory. Founder and CEO Elizabeth Holmes dropped out of Stanford at age 19, spent 10 years in obscurity developing a new technology for blood tests, then launched the company with a wave of publicity that would make Donald Trump and Steve Jobs envious. Business magazine cover stories, a New Yorker profile, a TED Talk. Along the way, she creates an advisory board with names like Kissinger, Frist, Schultz, Nunn, Perry, etc., high-ranking former government officials. The company garners a valuation of $9 billion, making Holmes, at 31, on paper the youngest self-made female billionaire in the world. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook is 3 months younger than Holmes. The premise is this. Holmes hated giving blood for routine medical tests. Her phobia was so great she thought there had to be a better way to do it. Microfluidics. Using a finger stick to collect a drop of blood instead of the more traditional practice of puncturing a vein near your elbow, Theranos promises the ability to run dozens of medical tests from that single drop instead of the numerous traditional blood vials. Moreover, Theranos promises to perform the tests at a fraction of the cost of industry leaders LabCorp and Quest. Disruptive technology indeed. The problem is that Theranos is highly secretive about its methods, choosing to go to the press to announce its new technologies and partnerships, never proving its mettle in a peer-reviewed scientific publication. Medical and scientific skepticism therefore abounds. In appearances, like one moderated by an acquaintance of mine, Holmes seems more like a charismatic mouthpiece for some sinister group than a true wunderkind. The Wall Street Journal reported extensively on the fact that Theranos is outsourcing its blood tests to third parties, not running the tests themselves. Moreover, the fingerstick assays work on only 5 of the company's menu of dozens of tests. The rest of the time, their test centers obtain blood via traditional venipuncture. What's going on here? Rather than come out and discuss the company's problems and plans to address them, the company has simply issued denials and obfuscations, hiding behind attorneys rather than letting its CEO speak. Schadenfreude is the word for it. Now it seems every business publication is piling on after the Wall Street Journal story. Nobody likes an upstart that promises to trample the established way of doing business, then fails to measure up, especially when disinviting scrutiny at every turn. This is shaping up to be a story of colossal underperformance for such high promise, if not outright fraud in the hype and publicity departments.
Dr. John Schumann is the president of OU Tulsa and a regular contributor here on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.